Hey everybody, and welcome back to another half episode of Random Chatterings. I'm Arlo Rodriguez, and wait a minute, who's here in the room with me?
Hey, what's up, dude?
Hey, Lorenz!
How's it going, bro?
Lorenz is here, everybody, and you know why? Because, we fooled you, this is not the end of month of, this is the end of month of King of the Hill, but the previous episode was not the end. We're doing a bonus episode just for you lovely, lovely people in the audience.
We're going back to Arlen Texas.
But, okay, the real reason why I wanted to do this bonus one is because I feel so bad that I promised this like a year and a half ago that I felt like you deserve a little bit more than normal. So we're doing one more episode for you. And this is a very particular reason why I saved this particular episode. So I'll just say my normal spiel, but it doesn't really apply. We'll be doing 5 episodes of King of the Hill, well, make that 6, in the month of September, make that October. Today, we'll be talking about Season 3, Episode 10's A Firefighting We Will Go, written by Alan R. Cohen and Alan Friedland, and directed by Cindy Tang Loveland.
Yay!
Oh my god, Lorenz. I know I already said Pretty Princesses is my favorite episode of all time, but this, as a child, was absolutely my favorite episode.
Oh, I could definitely see why.
And then after rewatching it for this podcast, it is, like, someone, I don't remember who mentioned exactly, but this is a tribute to the Three Stooges.
Hmm.
A very deliberate tribute to the Three Stooges in terms of, like, the type of, like, it's very it's a more slapsticky episode than any other King of the Hill episode is.
It's, like, very physical comedy.
Very physical comedy. We'll get into many, many wonderful examples in a little bit.
Yeah.
But I can absolutely see why just seeing, like, the guys, because they're not really shown as incompetent people, but in here, they're, well, Hank is, again, as we mentioned in previous episodes in this miniseries, that Hank is the leader of the group.
But they're just so dysfunctional. Okay, so pretty much take, like, just the dysfunctional relationship between Hank and Dale that we mentioned previously and multiply that by 3. And you've got this episode right
here.
Oh,
yes. Like, it's like Hank butting heads with everybody, like all of the guys, Boomhauer, Bill, and Dale. And it's so wonderful. Just how fucking crazy things get in this episode.
Like, normally you just see them, like, shooting the bull, drinking beer outside their houses. No, this episode is not the case. Like, they are actually, like, doing something together.
Yeah, exactly. And then you kind of wonder, like, sometimes there are a lot of episodes where they do collaborate and they work better. But for whatever reason, they're just not agreeing with each other. And this episode's actually structured differently from other episodes. Someone made a joke on a different podcast about, like, it's kind of like Rashomon. It's like it's flashing back into the events of what happened. But, like, it starts, and already you're thinking, oh, what do they do? They're in an interrogation room with the fire chief, and the fire chief is just trying to figure out what's going on. And, again,
it's non-linear this time.
Exactly, it's non-linear. Okay, but hold on. Before we get into the plot, I should mention a little bit more about why I love this episode so much. And it's not really related to the episode content, but it's more about what makes it so special. So for me, and I know it's interesting to see other people's stories about syndication, like what are the Simpsons episodes or what are the Malcolm in the Middle episodes that just didn't pop up in like during their weekly watchings. This was the episode that, for whatever reason, in my syndication package, it never came up. It came up very, very rarely.
Really?
Yeah, I think the Jumping Jack Crack episode when Hank uses crack as fish bait, that came up a lot. Husky Bobby came up a lot. The Texas Skill Saw Massacre came up a lot. But this one was one of the rare ones that either I would miss it or I just never caught it on TV.
Ah, okay.
There's a Hollywood Video in our neighborhood. We went to go visit it. And it was actually going out of business, but they were saying, oh, we're selling the DVDs, and one of the DVDs included this episode on it.
Nice.
And so, of course,
good
score.
Nice.
We ruined that DVD. We scratched it to death because of how often we would rewatch this episode.
Really? This
episode in particular. We saw it over and over and over again. At one point in my life, I could say that I probably memorized the entire script.
Oh, that's great, man. That's impressive.
Or obsessive, another way of putting it.
Yeah.
But like Lorenzo's mentioned, this does have a non-linear storytelling technique, starting in the present and then cutting back to the kind of telling the events of the story, first from the fire chief's perspective, and then, as we'll see later on, from the perspective of the guys.
That, the perspective of the guys, that is my favorite part of this episode.
That might have the best scene in King of the Hill history, just for the payoff. And it's so funny, because it's a scene that you really wouldn't expect them to, like, blow off, like, in an early season. Like, this is season 3
yeah.
that they do a scene like this. But we'll get to that. So the fire chief is interrogating them, and he's saying, "You guys are big, big trouble. This is the worst catastrophe in my 14 years as fire chief investigator," or whatever. And... And, like, already the guys are already the same weird shit, like, Dautry, comma, William Fontaine Del Toro, comma, United States, and Banks says, comma, numbskull, comma, shut up.
And then Dale just tells him, Rusty Shackleford, Rusty Shackleton.
Yeah.
Whatever his pseudonym is.
Yeah, and then just, like, the fire chief's just like, all right, well, let's just try to get back to the matter hand. It says in this file that you guys were doing some light yard work, and it cuts to the past, and it's them in front of in the alley drinking beer as always, and they're mentioning that Bill's gonna be a little late, and they're just thinking, whatever, Bill's gonna be coming in later, and then Bill arrives in a fucking fire truck.
Yeah, you wouldn't really expect that from someone like Bill.
Not really, and then you can see the expression on their faces, like they cut to their faces for like 5 seconds, like, oh, what is going on? And, of course, Bill is so excited. He's like, I'm a fireman! And he trips on the cooler. And Hank's like, ah. Yeah.
A little too good to be true.
Exactly. And then we're introduced to Heck Dorland, who's one of the volunteer firefighters at the Arlen Fire Department. Tells him that the firefighters are striking. And then Hank says the great line of, they're striking? Well, sir, fires don't go on strike, I tell you what.
Fires don't go on strike, I'll tell you what.
It's like... It's like kind of those funny jokes, like it's kind of like a slight at striking or like at unions a little bit, but it's kind of like that conservative perspective. It's like, well, they should be doing their jobs because fires don't wait for them. It's like the firefighters are striking because they want a living wage.
Yeah.
Or they also want help. We'll see a little later that like they're protesting in front of the
Medal of Honor. So they're just looking for anyone who would just volunteer.
Yeah, so they're just going to anybody, and Heck Dorling Pitcher tells them, you guys interested?
He talking about firemen, man. That dang old talking about Rampart 51. Oh, no dang old emergency, man. I bang on them shows on tape, man. I love that old.
Fact. Volunteer firemen receive sirens for their personal vehicles. Fact. And we can use them whenever we want. Fact.
Dale, sirens are only for fire emergencies. Now, Heck, assuming I pass the required courses and notify my insurance company in writing, will I get to drive the fire truck?
You got any speeding tickets?
No, sir.
I do.
Look at that. It's like, that's the kind of the giddiness we don't see from Hanks. It's like him like a child.
Yeah,
like,
they're all kind of like children in this episode.
Yeah, they literally like run up to the fire truck.
I kind of feel like they sort of like all age like 30 years. And they actually do kind of, they kind of play off of that absolutely later on
so
in this
cute.
Episode.
It's so cute. You never see them get so excited about anything in that kind of way. It's like Hanks saying, can I drive the fire truck? It's like, oh, it's so wonderful.
Like, this isn't lawnmowers, guys. Nope. This is the fire department. That's actually kind of exciting.
Yeah, and then we cut to Hank announcing to the family that I'm going to be living in the fire station, or I'm going to be sleeping at the fire station. I'm going to be a firefighter. And he's trying to impress Bobby a little bit, and then there's too many good lines. There's, I think Peggy's just preparing something, and Bobby mentions, spoons, can I assume the potatoes will be mashed tonight? and that's when Hank pops in, tells him, and then Bobby's surprised. It's like, well, you always have so much pride in being like a propane salesman. And then Hank mentions they're looking for volunteers, and then that's when Luann pops in and says, I can be a fireman too. Hank is very uncomfortable about this. It's, what if a very large man needs to be taken out and she had to carry him out? So basically,
and then
a little sexist
Peggy
there.
Jumps in and pretty much says, well, you can lift someone up through the principle of leverage.
Oh, what, the principle that I like to call leverage.
And here's the kicker. She tries to pick Bobby up and everything.
Yeah.
And then... when she puts him back down, she pulls her groin.
Yep. And And so Peggy kind of tries to compose herself. It's like, okay, nothing happened. Let's eat. And it's very clear she is in a lot of pain, which is painfully relatable to me now. Not the groins, but the constantly being in pain. I have back issues.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm trying to work at my current employer. I won't mention that they are. So I can get health insurance and then finally maybe get take this back thing taken care of finally. Mm. So they also kind of understanding, like, I'm with my mom right now and not really exposing that pain. Just being like, oh, it's fine, everything's fine. Or just like, if like, I stand up too quickly or something, it's like covering my mouth or something. Just like, oh, I'm fine. Like nothing's a problem. So that kind of thing. Like trying to show that everything's fine. So I kind of related to that in a new way in this in this new viewing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it cuts to them training, and they make Dale. They make Dale the one who's supposed to like carrying the fire hose, and he fucks it up completely. It just goes off all over the place.
Oh yeah, this is when they're at the school, right?
They're training.
Right, so they're like training, and like there's this bucket and with like a fire in it, and it's like a training simulation. Yeah. And like all those guys are like holding a fire hose, but like Dale does not hold like the tail end of it like he's supposed to in order to like aim it accurately. They just kind of grab it like pretty limply. They don't really have, like, a strong enough hold on it, so... Boom!
Yeah, it just sprays all over the place. And this is the beginning of that, well... I guess you could kind of say that that the... Well, the argument is kind of... Like, the argument in the beginning of the episode is the beginning of the... the homage to the Three Stooges with, like, you know... Four Stooges, exactly. And everybody, like, making fun of each other, like, saying, calling him a numbskull. And then, like, the physical comedy of Bill falling over the cooler. But then this is, like, the physical comedy of, like, the fire hose, like, slapping all of them with the water. And then it's Dale saying, "What's my fault? My mask fogged up." And he's fucking smoking a cigarette and covering up his mask.
Oh my god. And then Hank just pulls it off the mask. And
"Damn it, Dale, the safety and welfare of Arlington says to get serious."
He just pulls out the cigarette like, oh my god.
Yep, man. And then...
it's like these guys don't really have too much common sense.
No, not really. Well, Dale certainly doesn't have any common sense.
Oh absolutely, like, Dale. And Hank tries, though.
He is trying. I think he's it's not to spoil too much, but the guys pretty much say at the end that Hank is the only real fireman among them, but we'll get to that.
Like, yeah, Hank actually takes it seriously.
Very seriously. Like, he actually tells about the protocol. He actually knows, like, what specific codes are. Like, he knows what they mean. Yeah, he's a very strong dude in that regard. But, like, this is when Beef, I think he's the guy who's training them with them. Hank and Beef are there. And Beef pulls out the jaws, and this is weird scene just showing them the jaws and what the jaws can do. And it's like, this baby will peel it like an orange. And then Dale just pulls out a real orange and says, "Yeah, well, let's see what it does with a real orange." It's like that weird, like, Dale. Random kind of like comedy that's like, it doesn't make sense, but I'll just take it anyway. I will accept that Dale just has a real orange for some goddamn reason. I love it so much.
My god, man. And is it like the next scene where like they pull up to the school?
Not yet. This is a scene where we're kind of seeing that. We're introduced to Chet Elderson, but I do have to mention a little joke here where Hank is kind of telling Hank, like, I'm sharpening up the fire axes. And then that's when Dale says, "Hank's a lumberjack and he's okay." And they're making fun of him. And Hank is, well, okay. This expression, it's not like that menacing. It's just kind of like Hank being upset, but like in a different, do you ever hear of YouTube poop?
What's that?
YouTube poop is basically... like someone takes footage or like from a TV show, but then they kind of they reinterpret it, or they play around with it, like they loop the audio, they make it sound different, make the character say swears. So there's a YouTube poop about this episode where it's like it shows Hank's menacing expression, but it has like menacing music behind it. It's like, "Oh, I'm gonna kill everybody. So you're making fun of me, I'm gonna kill everybody." It's really funny. But anyway, so I can't really see that scene without thinking of that. But interesting thing about that joke, that was the first time I had ever heard a Monty Python reference.
Really?
And I didn't even know it was a Monty Python reference.
Huh. Interesting.
So I think a few years later, I finally saw The Holy Grail, but I had no idea what Monty Python was. I didn't know what the reference was. Mm-hmm. But then, like, when I think I rewatched Monty Python in those years in college, freshman years of college, when I stupidly went to sleep at 4 a.m. every goddamn weekday, because I just had time to fill, and I filled it. Rewatched Flying Circus, and that was the first time I saw the lumberjack. So I was like, "Oh my god, that's from!" And I thought, because because you don't know the timeline, or you just don't think of it. That's from King of the Hill, but it's like, wait, no, no. King of the Hill is making a Monty Python reference.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that was pretty amazing. That's like the first taste I had of Monty Python.
Wow.
In this episode.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah, so, but more importantly, I just wanted to mention that. This is when we're introduced to Chet Elderson. He's like an elder firefighter who's been working there. Oh, God, he looks really fucking old.
Yeah.
For a long, long time.
Like in his 70s, maybe his 80s.
70s, 80s.
Hey, say hello to Chet Elderson, one of Arlen's first volunteer firemen.
Well, what an honor, sir. Hank Hill, propane and propane accessories.
Ain't you the idiot what blew up the Megalomart? I was supposed to take my vacation that week. Idiot.
Actually, sir, the idiot you're thinking of was named Buckley.
Yeah, yeah. I'm retired now. Who unplugged my sign?
Chet, you know you can't plug it in. It don't work right. I'll get it for ya.
like jumps back because that's how shot he is. And so, like, okay, this sign is trouble.
Yeah, I think the funny part of that was that, like, the guys who were, like, at the fire department longer, like, they didn't really tell him about that. He just let him find out for himself.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, Heck kind of mentioned something about, like, check, you know, we can't plug it in. It don't work right. And then Dale says, ah, screw it. I'll just plug it in anyway. And that's when he gets electrocuted. But he's fine because it's a cartoon and this character needs to, he's in the plot line and we clearly see him in the interrogation room. He's fine.
You're right.
But have you ever had a moment like that where you've accidentally like plugged in something and I just had a weird reaction?
Man, I don't think so. Not in my recent memory. I have seen like things plugged in where like there's like a little bit of like blue and you can actually like, see the shock.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's where it can get a little scary.
Yeah, there was one time, and this is just me being careless. I think at my previous employer, I took out the plug from my like the MacBook charger, and I was just being careless. I think my hand was like too much over the plug itself. I mean, well, I'm just picturing like what that felt like. Touch the tips of the plug.
You don't want to touch the metal on
from
that.
Now on. No. I think I was just. Is part carelessness, part I just wasn't paying attention. Now, from now on, I only touch like that plasticky part. I don't never touch the metal part. Because I think if you just like, and I might be wrong on the science here, but I think if you just touch something to condense yourself, to ground yourself, that's what it is, then the plug, the metal part won't hurt as much.
Yeah, or, yeah, exactly. Just like grab the plastic because that part is definitely not going to shock you. Just don't touch the metal because conducts really easily.
And as I was remembering that moment, it's like, oh God, I remember what that felt like. And I don't ever want to feel that again. That was painful.
Yeah, but Lorenz,
Lorenz, you were mentioning that they go out to see the kids in the fire truck.
Oh yeah, pretty much like Hank, like trying to impress Bobby everything.
Well, not just Bobby, but also like the Dooley the bully.
Oh my God, I want to, let's talk about Stuart Dooley, man.
Yes.
Like, okay, so they all pull up to the school and then Bobby like is all impressed, like, oh my God, yeah, my dad's a fireman. And then Stuart Dooley is like right next to him and then he just says, they're volunteers.
And it's like,
oh my God, that's just the reason why I just loved Stuart Dooley, just for times like those.
He's a different type of bully. He's not like Nelson Muntz.
He's an asshole, but like,
but he's like some realism though. He's like, he's really not intelligent, but just like so to the fact about things.
He's just very unemotional. Yeah,
that too. And it's that's also Mike Judge.
Yeah, exactly.
The voice.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. But yeah, I remember like my first when like the first time I feel like Stuart Dooley had an impression on me was another King of the Hill episode where like Peggy like substitutes.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
As a teacher in Spanish for Bobby's class, or I think it was like Joseph and like Connie's class.
I think something like that. I think they're all three are in the class.
Yeah, and like the class is just like just unruly, and they're just like being loud and obnoxious, especially like Stuart Dooley, and he's just like pointing like a flashlight at like Peggy's eyes and everything.
Yeah, no, he's been really cruel to her.
Yeah, and Peggy was just not having any of it, and then she's like, okay, hand it over. And then
Stuart
Dooley just goes up and pants her.
Oh my
and then everyone just starts laughing. And then Stuart Dooley is like the only one who doesn't really laugh and just says, I pulled your pants.
I thought, wow. I thought you were going to bring up the moment where he's like, I think someone suggested Dooley to like say something in Spanish. And he says to someone, you're dead. And then he says,
Tu eres muerto.
I forgot about that.
En español.
En español, por favor. So, but there's another bully there. I don't, it's Kearney's not his name. There's another bully. The Kearney's the name of the Simpsons bully, but there's another bully with like blonde hair, like a little shaved.
Yeah.
And kind of
chunky.
A little chunky, and they're mentioning, Hank mentions they can't use the fire hydrant because it's only for emergencies, and then the blonde bully says, they don't know how to open the hydrant, and then Dooley says again, because they're volunteers.
Because they're volunteers.
And then Hank says, son, you are about to get very, very wet.
Oh my god. And this is where the shit just goes downhill.
Yeah, so they try to do, and it's,
they
again,
try to connect it all to, like, the fire hydrant, and then Dale was like, I guess, like, not screwing it, like, right.
Yeah, in the right direction. He's twisting it the wrong way.
And then the fire hydrant just starts bursting out and everything. And I think, like, Boomhauer, who, like, takes out the jaws, mentioned earlier, that could peel open car doors, like, really, like, easily, like
yep.
that.
Yep.
And he just, like, climbs it over, like, the top of the fire hydrant.
Yeah, and it goes spurting upwards.
It just gets even worse, and, like, the whole street just gets flooded.
Yeah, and then Dale, of course, he runs off. But I have to mention, because, like, it's like dialogue that just, like, runs through my head sometimes, and it's so funny to me. Like, Hank's just saying, damn it, Dale, you stripped the bolt. And then Dale's saying, it wasn't me. Like, it really was you. You were the one with the wrench. And then he just, of course, he runs off, doesn't take responsibility. And so we come back, and the fire chief's like, oh, you were the ones that busted that hydrant. We got an anonymous call. It was a bunch of kids. And then Dale says, bunch of kids. I gave you names. Hill, Bobby, Gribble, Joseph, Bill, putting the blame on his own child.
Oh my
who God. Broke the hydrant.
Another example of just Dale just, like, watching out for himself and just not showing empathy.
Oh, exactly. And then it's the Boomhauer, like, walks over and says, and even blames Dale with the jaws of life, knocks their heads together. And that's another reference to the Three Stooges. But
it's
of course,
like
you don't
they
really
all,
think about
they
that.
They all, like, fuck up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, none of them are taking responsibility for it.
Well, Hank sort of is. And he's the one who mentions, guys, the fire hydrant's the least of our worries. He doesn't care about that. And then the fire chief says, you don't. You guys could be looking at jail time. And then this is what you were mentioning earlier about Rusty Shackelford.
Rusty Shackelford?
My name is Shackelford. Rusty Shackelford. I refuse to speak without my attorney present. I am Mr. Shackelford's attorney, Rusty Shackelford. My client pleads insanity.
My name is Dotrieve Commabill, and I am also insane.
Oh.
It's and like, Hank, nice try, guys, Hank, but that's just not gonna work.
Hank is just, like, face-palming, and it cuts to the... Oh, God, I love that scene so much. It's like they're just grasping at straws at this point. Just, oh, God, what do we do?
Oh, Lord. Man. We're also getting to the part where, like, just how they spend their downtime down at the fire station.
Oh, I'm going to go over as much of this as I possibly can. I took careful notes on this. So we cut back. We come back from commercial, and the fire chief says, so after you broke the fire hydrant, and this is Hank trying to talk to everybody, trying to, like, talk some sense into them. It's like, we've been given this opportunity. Let's not do any more to screw this up.
Now, how about running some ladder carry drills?
Not interested. You pushed me aside, made me look like a fool in front of my own flesh and blood.
Hey, Sage, plug in my Alamo sign, will you?
Better not, Dale. Remember, it doesn't work right.
B-A-Bay, B-E-B, B-I-Bicky-Bi-B-O-Bo-Bicky-Bi-Bo.
I said not to.
B-U-Boo.
Hey, I found a cupboard with all kinds of jerky in it. You know, I bet we could use this lid as a frisbee. Catch, Hank. Hey.
What the dang old that beer, man? What do you think you're doing? I mean, old dang old fatty belt buckle, man.
I kid you,
yeah. What's the... What's going on in here?
I'll take care of it. Boomhauer, put some ice on that ear. Bill, you fix the window. Dale?
No. No more orders. Heck, I cannot work with this man here. I want a transfer.
Dale, shut up. You're acting like an idiot.
B-A-Bicky-Bi-B-Bo-Bo-Bicky-Bi-Bo.
That's enough.
Now either you guys get along, or I'll find four others who can.
So Hank, I think they go to the Megalomart, and then that's when we see the firefighters actually striking, and I think it's meant to kind of be like a, not like a joke, but like a visual joke, but they're right! They should have, like, be able to have healthcare. Like, why are they restricting healthcare from them? Just because they're firefighters? That doesn't make any sense. So, like, even though, as a kid, I kind of thought, oh, that's funny. It's like, that's the callback to the striking firefighters before. But it's like, fucking yeah, they should get healthcare.
Yeah. Kind of important, especially for a job like firefighting.
Fucking exactly! Exactly. And it's like, even though we do kind of like Heck as a character, like, there's some union shit we're not seeing, or like some behind the scenes shit, or just like the way he's kind of like, he downplays the fact that they're striking. It's like they're striking because you're not giving them healthcare. But anyway,
a little bit. But yeah, anyway, especially just because like they're pretty much all on the field, and not only are they like putting out fires, but they also have to like lift like unconscious people like out of the scene, make sure that they're out of there and they're safe.
Right, and they might like inhale a lot of smoke, even with the mask, that there still might be some smoke that goes through. It's a very dangerous job.
It's gonna put a toll on your body.
Absolutely. So it's, I know in hindsight, that's meant to kind of be played for last, but now in hindsight, it's like, well, fuck that. They should get healthcare.
Right.
But anyway, that's kind of just a reason to go to the Megalomart to show that they're protesting, and then we see that Peggy is, Luann knows what's going on, goes to Peggy and says, it seems like your groins are still hurting you.
Peggy's still in denial.
Still in denial, and that's when Luann says, why don't you just tell Hank that you pulled your groin? And that's when Peggy says a great line, oh honey, you've never been married.
It's kind of like that line, like, it's not in this episode, but it's like where, like, the episode where Bobby, like, has his first girlfriend, and gets dumped, and then like Hank tells like Bobby.
No, it's Peggy. Peggy rubs it in.
No, it's more like Hank tells Bobby that like dating is all about who wins.
Yeah.
And that's, I feel like that's sort of like what's going on there. Like if Peggy admits that she pulled her groin to Hank, then Hank's won. You know, that's pretty much what that reminds me of.
I guess that's what it is. It's. I mean, I have never been in a relationship with Lorenzo. I don't know if this is accurate or not.
Yeah, I've never really been in anything long-term either, so I get it.
People in the comments, tell us if this is accurate to how merit actually works.
Because neither of us really know about that.
Not really.
But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just an excuse to kind of show that, okay, so Hank's buying supplies because he's going to be staying over at the fire station. That's the little plot detail that's mentioned there. And so we cut to the firehouse, and it is a fucking mess. It is in absolute shambles. Bill and Dale use the fire hose as a net, and they're playing volleyball. And Hank is like, you can't use a fire hose like this, you'll damage the elasticity. And Dale says, what do you got in the bags, party pooper? Some party poop. And Hank says they brought Frito Pie, and Boomer goes over to the Frito Pie. And Bill's a little disappointed, but like, okay, Hank interrupted the game, so I win, right? And Dale says, for some reason, wrong, you automatically lose, but I'll go double nothing on the ping pong card. All right, okay. So they rush over to the ping pong, and they're playing. And they play for a long time.
Into the night, like while Hank is trying to sleep. So then Hank just goes down.
I think this is my favorite scene of the entire episode.
Yeah, Hank just like walks down, takes like the ping pong and
give
just,
me the ball, damn it,
and steps on it. Good, ball's broken. And then
Bill grabs his glasses, throws on the ground, and says, there. And this is when this great music starts playing in the back.
It's like, dang it, Bill, that was my only pair of glasses.
Damn it, Hank, that was our only ball.
Hank just like chases Bill, but like he can't really see, so he's just like crashing into the wall.
Yeah, and I think Dale gets someone gets frustrated, grabs the Frito Pie, the hot Frito Pie, throws it, Hank dodges it, smashes into Bill's face, and his face is covered in burns.
Oh my god.
And
man,
he tries to throw it back. Oh, and he tries to throw it at Dale, and he actually hits face first, intending to hurt Dale, but Dale has the fire mask, and he pulls it down. He says, ha ha ha, and then Bill says, my face hurts, and then Hank says, well, it'll match your ass when I'm done kicking it. And oh god, like that reaction shot, like the close up on Bill's face, and then him like scurrying away like a squirrel, like backing up in up the stairs, like rushing up. And it's a bit ableist humor there because of like Hank can't see very well. He runs into the wall because he can't see very well with his glasses. It's like you see Hank's hands, it's like, I'm gonna get you. And Bill tries to go down the fire pole and he gets stuck in the hole. And it's like, no fair,
and Hank doesn't even try to rescue him.
Nope. And Dale and Boomhauer with the paddles like slapping his ass. And then
they take the broken ball and then just keep playing with it. And then Hank, like nothing happened.
And then Hank, like, because the way that the fire station's, it's like there's a bit of a slit. Like there's, you can kind of like look over, like there's the bunk beds, but you can kind of look over so you can see everything below. So Hank pops up and says, are you guys playing with that busted ball now? Oh, and that's the exact reaction shot of him just in agony. That's used in the anger montage in the Texas Skillsaw Massacre, which we discussed earlier.
Nice.
In their previous episode. And that's when Heck Dorland comes in.
I got bad news, man. Chet Elderson died. Natural causes.
Oh, man, what a shame.
Bummer, man.
Very sad.
Holt! Crying out loud.
It's so funny, because it's like, it's not even like a normal fart, like a. It's like a fully new farts.
Oh my god.
And Hex is like, whoo, for crying out loud. Just.
And even at the funeral, all four of them are just acting dysfunctional.
Yeah, like Hank is repairing his glasses, can't see where I'm going. Damn you, Bill. And Boomhauer noticing that they're not really carrying the whole weight, and Bill says, it's Dale, he's faking it. And fucking Dale is not even touching the. Coffin.
Are they pallbearers, or
is that what that is?
Yeah, that's what the term is called. Yeah, like, so they're like are carrying like the casket into the hole.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what they are. I didn't actually know that. I didn't know what that.
Yeah, pallbearers.
Pallbearers. Okay, I'm learning so much today. I'm learning so much in this episode, which we're recording on six different separate occasions, not all at once. Wink, wink. I'm just kidding. Anyway. So anyway, sorry everybody. Lorenz's dog is
acting up.
He's acting up a little bit.
He'll get over it.
it'll be okay. Maybe it doesn't even pick up that much. But anyway, as I was mentioning before, the perfect set of animation here. Worst way this could possibly go. Dropping the coffin. Everybody goes off like in a xylophone. Like everyone grabbing on.
And Chet Anderson's pants.
Yeah, they grab onto his pants, and we cut to the widow just like looking at him. It's like. And they all fall into the. They fall into the. And they fall into
that's
the.
That's like even
the
at a man's
site.
Funeral, they can't keep their shit together.
No, and they.
That's just how dysfunctional all four of them
are. They pants him, and Dale again, like that unsympathetic thing you mentioned before, it just says, told you it was bad luck. It's like, it's your goddamn fault, Dale! You were supposed to be grabbing the coffin!
Lord.
Oh, and then, of course, it cuts back to them at the fire station. They're mad at each other. And then Dale actually is trying to apologize to Hank, but Hank is not having it. He's like, no, you cannot speak to me ever again. And Bill says, that goes for me, you two faker. And then Dale says, man, like sometimes, I guess maybe when you're getting into a heated argument, you say shit you'd regret. Dale just says, why don't you go eat more pizza? It's all you ever do is eat pizza. That's why you're bald and your wife left you.
Oh my god.
And you
think, that's just, that's like. You don't do that, man.
You don't. But in another episode, like Bill probably would have just, like, that's really mean. But instead he says, hey, I'm burned. Sympathize with me. And then Hank is telling everybody to go to bed. And it's like, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. What did I tell you about talking to me? And then Bill again is like, stop the fighting. This is no way to honor the memory of Chet Elderson. This is when Dale says, I think I will honor Chet's memory by plugging in his beloved Animal Beer sign. Plugs it in. Hank plugs it out. Plugs it in. Oh, fire alarm's going out. And it's someone saying code 44. And again, like we've mentioned before, Hank has been studying being a firefighter. He knows exactly what that is. Code 44. Our first fire. Let's move. And they get prepared pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And the music is kind of like a little energetic.
It actually seems
exciting.
Like that they might actually keep it together.
Yeah, exactly. And they seem like they're prepared. They get to Goober Smooches. It's like some kind of, like an Applebee's kind of place. Goober Smooches.
I don't know.
It's some kind of restaurant chain. Maybe it might just be a fake one for the show.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So they come in and they throw the axe perfectly, got the fire hose, and they're all running off in that in a similar animation cycle as to the one in West Side Storm when they're running to see if Khan fed them dogs. We talked about that in episode one of this miniseries, but then it just turns out it's just a dumpster fire, and Hex is telling him, "Fire's out, man." Oh, that's good, I guess. And
ironic part is they go back to the fire station, and the fire station itself is burnt down.
Yeah, and this moment is meant to be taken very, very seriously. But before that, Hex shows that he got a plaque and he's gonna rename the fire station, and. Again, hey, Dale, this type of obliviousness. They're at the wreck of the fire station. And again, there's the sad music. You see the fire station collapse. This is meant to be taken very, very seriously.
Where do you want us, Chief?
Back in the grave with Chet Elderson.
I hereby dedicate you the Chet Elderson Firehouse.
And it just cuts to the camera, cuts to the black next to, like, flimsily, like, hold up against, like, a brick or something.
Oh, my God.
It's like, who would be that dumb to read? Oh, it's beautiful. And it cuts to Hank saying, I have written down, like, he's basically saying this is a snitch. I've written down all the violations that these two nincompoops have done. And so many great lines from Dale. He says, I read that. It's all lies. Hank did it. Bill did it too. I told them not to. And then Bill says, you chicken-necked ass, I'll kill you. And that's when everybody, like, gangs up on each other. And the fire chief has to use a fire extinguisher to calm them down. And God damn it. I love that. Hank did it. Bill did it too. I told them not to.
It just reminds me of that. Like, of, like, this one instance in Malcolm in the Middle where, like, Lois and Al are just talking, and then, like, their boys are just, like, wrestling on the ground, and then Lois just, like, takes out a hose and, like, stop it right now!
It's exactly like that. It's a great way of the commercial. So this is an interesting thing, again, not to bring up the syndication thing again, but because I didn't see this episode live, I think I started seeing King of the Hill live around episode season 6, I think. So when in syndication, They cut the scene out. They cut to commercial with Dale dedicating the plaque, the television firehouse plaque. That's when it cuts to commercial. So I never understood, and it didn't make sense in sort of continuity. Why were the guys like suddenly covered in the foam of the fire extinguisher? But it was until I saw the VHS for the first time that they got the extra scene, that like, oh, that's why they're covered in the foam. Which is really funny that yeah. I never had the connection put in, because there's an argument about whether what the right way to watch an episode is the syndicated version or the real, like, the aired version. And usually on the DVDs, they have the aired version. So, but it was interesting to know that as a child, there's, like, details of the plot I was missing because I just didn't know, because I just took the syndication one by heart and I thought, oh, it's just, they're just covered in stuff for no reason. But there's a, yeah. But anyway, that's an interesting story about syndication, kind of fucking with continuity a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. So now this is, I mean, I already said that my favorite scene is the guys fighting with each other, that whole crazy scene, which is straight up slapstick. But there's a scene coming up that might be, like, maybe the best scene in all of King of the Hill,
where they all just try to tell their side of the story.
Yeah. So the fire chief is asking, I want to get... I want to hear what happens before you lame brains went to goober smooches. Then I'll know it's one of you to bring up on charges. And everyone gulps. Understandably, I don't want to go to prison. And then says, points to Dale, says, you first. And we see Dale's perspective on everything. And it's very interesting because, and it gets sad. With we'll see Bill's perspective in a bit. Yeah. But Dale is showing himself like he's like buff. He has long flowing hair. He shows Hank like a Tom Landry type, like screaming at the bullhorn.
He's like, just like, move.
Get yourself a few seconds.
I'll tell you what.
Get yourself a few seconds. Get yourself squared away before I. And he, like, that's
just like portrays Hank to just be like really bossy. I mean, there's, I kind of feel like there is some truth to that. Though.
There is, but it's also because like they're not like there's other episodes where Hank's anger isn't as justified. Yeah. In this one, he's absolutely justified. They're not fucking pulling their weight. They should be doing better as firefighters.
Right.
They're like, just like Hank says, like, the safety and welfare of Ireland's at stake. So, like, I think it is justified, but, like, that kind of shows Dale's perspective. of like that's how he pictures Hank. It's just like he's just screaming at us. He's just screaming at him. And he puts the blame on Boomhauer because Boomhauer is tanning, and then the fire alarm goes off, and Boomhauer knocks over the tanning lamp, and then it's like Dale's remembering the memory. In the memory, other than his buff chest and his long flowing hair, he says, "I race to the fire truck with lightning speed," and he shows his cigarette, throw it like haphazardly, and it lands on the carpet, and then he says, "That's all I remember."
Wow.
So clearly, ooh, I fucked up there too, but I don't want to go in prison. And then this is the best scene in King of the Hill history. I wish I had the clip to show, but like if you're a longtime fan, especially because this is the only time this ever happened, so we see things from Boomhauer's perspective.
Yeah, man, you tell you what, a dang old detector man talk about government take away freedom of smoke. Man, I tell you what, a dang old yo man get.
Hey, man, I'll tell you what, man, old dang old boy ain't right. Man, I'm going to talk about old kicking them dang old ass, man. I don't take...
For God's sakes, Hank, act like an adult, man. And keep it down, guys, will you? I am trying to get through an article on vintage Camaros, and I've been on the same dang page for 20 minutes.
Dang old pretty pizza, but I'll tell you what.
This is the only time where we actually see Boomhauer saying things clearly.
Yes,
but this
exactly.
Time the script is flipped. And
yeah.
Like Boomhauer is saying things clearly. But guess what? Everyone else is just kind of mumbling.
They're
like,
talking in Boomhauer speak because that's how he sees everyone else. He thinks everyone else is incomprehensible and he's making perfect sense.
Right.
Which that also does pay off in a joke in a little
yeah,
later.
Yeah, like they all just like kind of have like I guess like the same like intonation. They're
yes.
Just like
it's so wonderful. Because, like, you never, like, I think that's Mike Judge's real voice.
Yeah.
Maybe he's playing up a little bit. There's like, a little bit of an intonation there. But it's, you never, in the entire history of this series, you never hear Boomhauer speak comprehensively like this. So that's why it's such a wonderful moment for longtime fans.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's that's why it's, like, the best, a line with so much payoff. Like, if you're just watching the show for the first time, you just see that moment. It's like, oh, I guess that's just... You kind of get an idea that Boomhauer doesn't really speak that well, but it doesn't feel like as satisfying if you haven't been watching the show as long as like other people have. So,
right.
That's why that scene is so wonderful. But so in this version of the story, he claims that Bill left on the toaster oven, and that's when we cut to Bill's perspective. And oh man, this scene is especially after watching Pretty Dresses. Like again, we're seeing them from their perspectives. So Dale sees himself as overconfident. Boomhauer sees himself as the only rational person. Bill puts extra weight on himself and makes himself balder than he actually is.
Mm.
It's very sad. And the music is kind of just showing that it's like a very like comical, like circusy type of music. But that's how Bill pictures himself as a slob. Like he doesn't even.
He just does not exactly have the most positive self-image
of
himself.
And he pictured himself eating the French bread pizzas, like bobbing for apples. Like that's how he ate the pizzas in his perspective.
Yeah.
And then he remembers, and then I gave myself a little dessert. He turns on the stove, warms up a marshmallow a little bit, and that's when he says, "Oh my, he might have left the fire on the stove on." But then he's trying to catch himself a little bit. So I turned off the toaster oven just like I said. And then the fire chief is saying, "Well, what's going on? Like, what happened after the fire alarm went off?" And that's when Bill mentions that Dale was switching the oxygen tanks. And Hank is saying, "Why did you switch the tanks? Or what do you mean switching the tanks?" And this is when Dale comes clean and says, "Oh, let's face it, me, Bill, and Boomhauer had no idea what we were doing. You're the only real fireman among us."
Yeah, I know. He actually does like acknowledge Hank in that way.
Exactly. And it's a pretty big moment for Dale to actually admit, okay, we've been fucking up, we've been just screwing around, and I noticed that your tank was low, mine was full, and you probably would have had to, like, need as much oxygen as possible to carry our charred bodies out of that raging inferno. Well, the fun that they thought they were going to.
Yeah.
And then Hank actually is like, oh, all right. And so the chief is pointing fingers at, so the fire could have been caused by Gribble's smoking, Boomhauer's tanning, and Dotry's incessant cooking. And then cuts in and says, it could have been, but it wasn't. And I'll tell you why it wasn't, I'll tell you what. And he basically shows like the way that we've been seeing this, like they've been acting like children. He pictures them as children, Dale, Kid Dale, like, yeah, with the kazoo blowing. Like, well, not kazoo. What, it's not a kazoo. Fucking streamer? Birthday streamer?
Something like that. And basically, like, it's, like, it was pretty much, as soon as they got that firefighting gig, they aged, like, they went back, like, 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
Like, they're like kids. That's pretty much how they behave.
Exactly.
I mean, other than Hank, but, like, the rest of them.
Yeah. But I think even Hank even missed a little bit, like, he's very honest. It's like, except instead of fighting fires, we were busy fighting each other. So even Hank admits that he fucked up, too.
Right.
And then he says, anyway, the fire alarm went off, and then they grow up, and it's kind of sad to see Bill get really, really fat as he's eating the French pizza. And then Hank says, I sprung into action.
I switched off the lamp, turned off the stove, and put out the cigarette. I ran toward the fire truck, and I saw Dale fiddling in the back. I didn't know that he was busy switching the oxygen tanks. Awfully nice thing of him to do, since we weren't even on speaking terms.
Still aren't.
Then I put my blinker on to pull out. Wait a minute. I remember seeing some kind of yellow light in the mirror. I know what caused the fire. Somebody plugged in that stupid Alamo beer sign.
And?
And then he's trying to figure out, and I know that someone had to be, and he knows exactly who it is, but, like, the music's kind of a little tense, too. It's like, oh, Dale's gonna get it. And then it says that somebody
had to be Chet Elderson.
And, yeah, he blames it on Chet. And then Dale immediately goes, like, I did not Chet Elderson! And Hank mentioning that he loved that sign, but it always made spark and plugged it in. It was a real fire hazard. Isn't that right, Dale? And then Dale's like, right. Chet Elderson must have put it on it in the last time he was at the station. What a moron. May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
And then Bill agrees. And then Boomhauer is not having this. He knows exactly what's going on. It's like, and of course, no one can understand Boomhauer. So he says, like, Dale's the one that did it. Did you let Chet alone, man? And then the fire chief's just, like, standing there. It's like, so each and every one of you believe that Chet Elderson started that fire. And again, that's another scene that it's cut in syndication. They don't show Boomhauer's perspective. So they just cut to the fire chief saying that, and then there's, like, a little shot of Boomhauer going, like, ah. But that's cut off in syndication.
Really?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
So we didn't even... It's a great payoff, especially with the scene we just saw, Boomhauer basically proving that, oh, yeah, I'm the only one who understands. I'm the only one that makes sense here. And it's funny. Like, there's some interesting thing going on in King of the Hill about, like, what lies... Or, like, when is the right time to lie, and, like, when is the right time to tell the truth. And in this case, Hank does, like, save Dale's ass by saying that it was Chet who did it.
Yeah.
And then he says, well, we could just say it was an electrical fire. Accidents do happen. But he is lying under oath.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know how to feel about that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of putting the dead guy under the bus.
A little bit. Dead guy was kind of an asshole too in some ways, but he's also just like a jaded asshole. He's like a jaded old man, like a frumpy person. There's a lot of examples of Hank having to lie to kind of save someone, or there's a great example of the episode when Peggy finds out about the affair between Nancy and John Redcorn, and she's kind of been put in a similar position. Like, she has a chance to tell Dale the truth and ends up not doing it because she realizes it could ruin Dale's relationship with Joseph. And so they have to make that decision of, we have to let the sleeping dogs lie. We have to keep this a secret. It's not morally... It's morally objectionable, but it's interesting to see those, like, moral gray areas. Like, I'm sure there's, like, a bunch of moments there where we just have to, like, we can't really tell the whole truth. It's like showing layers to these characters that they're not, like, they're not
nothing
all perfect.
Is black and white.
Exactly.
And that's, like, what the wonderful thing about the show is, you know?
Exactly. And so they do pin it on Chet Elderson, but they do say it's an electrical fire. So I think that's the way of, like, making sure that, or, like, kind of softening the blame on him. It's just, it was an electrical fire. It was an accident.
Yeah, so and I don't know, blames. Like, I kind of feel like the fire chief was, like, I don't think he really wanted to, like, punish, like, really any, like, one of the four of them.
No, I think he did.
He did.
He did. No, he was pointing fingers, and he's like, I want to know who fucked up here. He didn't say that, but, like, then I'll know which one to bring up on charges.
But, yeah, I mean, he pretty much bought, like, the Chet Elderson thing, like, really, like, that, you know?
He did, and I think it's because, it's Hank. He's the goody-goody two-shoes. Like, of course, I'll take Hank, the real... Not the real firefighter, but, like, the only decent firefighter at his word. And I think that's kind of Hank using a little bit of his... like pulling a little bit of his weight there to make him believe it. So yeah, it's a little sleazy, but
what can you do?
What can you do? And so the fire chief steps out and he's still a little flustered, like, all right, you're free to go. And then Bill mentions, well, I heard Mrs. Throckmorton is looking for 4 plumbers. And then Hank says, no. And then Bill says, it's all the beer we can drink. And Hank says, well, yeah, I could use a beer. And they say, yep. Mm-hmm. And they step out in the interrogation room and we cut to credits. And it's a nice jaunty music. And again, that's that reference to the Three Stooges of like, oh, they're gonna do another crazy thing. It's like, they're looking for 4 plumbers. It's like, it's straight out of Three Stooges. This wonderful homage to the Three Stooges.
Indeed.
Yep. So now, but there's like one more plot point we gotta tie up. There's a great montage in the Marvel post credit sequence of Peggy exercising and trying to strengthen her groin. And they take it seriously. Like, she sets up a mat and she's gonna pick up Bobby again. She has like a what is that thing she has tied around her waist?
Like a back brace?
A back brace, yeah. She has that, and she picks up Bobby, lifts him up over his head, and says, drops. Oh yeah, and just drops him like a sack of dirt.
It's like Bane, like, dropping Batman from the Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What will break first, your spirit or your body? Breaks Batman's back. Like, just Jesus, like that. That's your sign.
But it's like, I proved my point. I am strong. And I never hurt my groin. And then it just cuts to Dale. Because there's always, we didn't mention this, but like when they say the Judgmental Films, that's Mike Judge's production company. There's always a line that they decide is the funniest one. And so it has Dale going, Bicky Bye Bee Bo Bo, Bicky Bye Bo. And then it cuts to the 20th Century logo. And then we're out. That was a firefighting way to go.
Mm-hmm.
That... Rewatching this episode, I think I laughed harder at Pretty Dressed because of the darker humor, but like it's in terms of just like great slapstick, great character moments, just hilarious moments. It's just like, I think I can see why this was my favorite as a kid, because it's just like, it's like more like The Simpsons than any other episode of King of the Hill, and I think that's what makes it so special in that regard. It's like,
it was like very cartoony. Yeah,
but there's also like some really great examples of animation. Like I said, like that scene of them pantsing Chet. It's like, how the hell does that happen? You have to watch that scene. Just like I mentioned, the logic of it. It's like Hank bending over to like pick up the glasses, and someone tips over. They grab the leg, and then another person. It's like, it's beautiful.
Oh my god, man!
And again, like that shot of Bill. I think of it all the time. It's like, my face is, they'll match your ass, and I'm done kicking. It's like that's so good. That's so good.
Yeah, just like that scene while they're all at the fire station, and they're just. They just had enough of each other.
They're just all at each other's
throats. It's like
throats.
That. It's just like that classic cabin fever syndrome.
There is something like that going on, and it's just such a wonderful episode. It's a wonderful outlier in the history of the show. There isn't really that much slapstick humor of that extent. It's still like, this is King of the Hill. This is, the guys are acting like they would act. Like, Hank acts like how you would act. Dale acts like he would act. It makes sense in terms of characters, but it's just a little zanier than other episodes normally are. So I think that's why I can understand why it was a favorite as a kid, and it's still one of my favorites even now. Maybe not to the extent, but there's still a lot to appreciate about this episode.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Final thoughts, Lorenz? Not on the series as a whole, because we already did that. But like, just on this episode.
Oh, just on this episode. Yeah, just like seeing just the dynamic between those 4 buddies, like, in a whole new way is just very amusing. Like, like, how would they act if like they actually had to like be in more of like a work environment, you know?
Yeah, you're right. There wasn't really an episode like that. There's like, I know I'm thinking of an episode when they all agree to, because like Dale has this conspiracy of Chuck Mangione still living in the Megalomart, and they volunteer as, not volunteer, but they pretend to be exterminators to try to flush him out or something. So there's some episodes like that, but not many. Not many.
Not to this extent.
Not to this extent. So it makes it special in that way as well.
Yeah. So
great, just great, great episode.
Absolutely.
Very, very fun.
Yeah, it's a classic.
All right, everybody, that that concludes the month-ish of King of the Hill. Thank you so much for listening. Again, I really felt like we should do a bonus episode because you have been waiting for so long for this, and it felt right to give yourself a little extra bang for your buck, even though you're not paying for this. I hope you're not paying for this. If you're paying for this, let me know, and I will shut those sites down. This should be free for everybody. Lorenz, thank you so much. I know I was just bringing it up as just a thing I was working on, and I was going to do it by myself, but when you said you wanted to do it, that's like, now I have to do it. If I'm doing it with Lorenz, then we're going to finally get this done. So thank you so much.
I think it's just a fun show to talk about, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And like we've already like even just like throughout just talking about it, we've already come up with ideas for other potential month ofs that we're going into. That'll be a little down the line. I'm not announcing anything yet because that
make false promises.
Make false promises, and I don't want to do that anymore. But thanks for everybody for listening, for joining in this journey. My voice doesn't hurt as much as it normally does, but I still had fun.
You pulled through, man.
All right, Lorenz, thank you so much for joining me.
Absolutely,
as well for
this. Sir.
All right, take care, everybody.
Later.
Bicky-bye-bee-bo-bo, Bicky-bye-bo!